Tundra Talk is brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, your locally owned source for hunting, fishing, and shooting gear in interior Alaska. They sell proven gear that'll tackle whatever Alaskan task you need it to, and Frontier always stays current with gear for the season. Whether you're baiting bears in the spring, fishing, camping, or dip netting in the summer, you're looking for game bags and moose camp gear in the fall, if you need to stock up on trapping lures or just get everything you need to go ice fishing, they've got you covered. They always carry a wide variety of Alaskan-proven clothing and boots, camping gear, meat processing supplies, guns, ammo, reloading and shooting supplies, as well as camping gear and backpacking food. Downstairs in Century Hardware, you'll find a full hardware store naturally, and you'll also find your snow machine, ATV, marine accessories down there. They go out of their way to stock plenty of quality, useful equipment. And whether you're gearing up for a hunting or fishing trip, working on a never-ending home improvement project, or anything in between, it's usually a one-stop shop. Frontier Outfitters is located on 3rd and Old Steese in Fairbanks, and they have a second location in North Pole, so make sure you stop in next time you need to gear up. This episode of Tundra Talk is also brought to you by Hedgecock Group Realtor Rick Lindsay, a guy that can take care of just about any of your real estate needs in the Fairbanks area. Now, the Hedgecock Group has been in Fairbanks North Pole real estate market since the early 80s, and their service is tailored to meet the diverse needs of home buyers in interior Alaska. Now, Rick has lived in Fairbanks for a long time and understands a lot of the less obvious ins and outs of buying and selling property around here. You know, things like water holding tanks and permafrost and all that jazz. Fairbanks is a really unique place to live, and having a realtor that knows what to look for in a quality place can make all the difference. Rick's a Marine Corps veteran and will work hard to get you exactly what you need. And if you're looking to buy or sell real estate in the Fairbanks or North Pole area, reach out to Rick at 907-378-6780 and go check out his Instagram at RLINDSEY113 at RLINDSEY113. He's really a passionate outdoorsman. He's just like us. He's one of us, and he loves to share his adventures on there. And he's got a pretty nice cranker of a ram that I'm jealous of. So go check him out. I know there's lots of you out there that dream of moving to Alaska, but it's a big step and can be kind of intimidating. Landing a solid job before you move can make things run a lot smoother, but you might not be sure of the job market or even really where to look. Now, if you're an experienced ASC certified or GM factory trained technician, I've got good news for you. Chevrolet GMC of Fairbanks is looking to hire qualified service department techs, and they've got enough work to keep you pretty much as busy as you want to be. Fairbanks Chevy has a very busy shop, but they allow for flexible scheduling. They offer top market pay rates with paid overtime, a great benefits package with a 401k retirement plan with contribution matching, and, you know, for a service tech, you can really make a good solid living. They can offer relocation assistance to help get you up here, paid training to get you spun up, and they have a well-lit and well-maintained facility, and these are all things that, I mean, help contribute to a great work atmosphere. On top of all that, they make it a priority to allow you to take your vacation time during hunting season, something that is really tough in the service and construction industries here in Fairbanks and can sometimes be a deal breaker for folks like us. Good help and hard workers are always welcome in Fairbanks, and if this is the opportunity you've been waiting for, apply at fairbankschevy.com or call their service manager, Rick Lindsay, directly at 907-215-6444.
That's how you do it.
Well, now that we're all pissed, welcome back to Tundra Talk, everybody. I'm Tyler Friel, sitting down tonight with Dr. Frank Schultz, Mr. Mark Rowenhorst, and your new name is Buffalo Brian,
yeah.
Or Buffalo Bill, Buffalo Bob.
Yeah.
You guys just got back from, you had drawn the farewell tag this year. They do exist.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, yeah, like I said, I ran into you yet. Today's Monday. Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah.
And I for some reason thought, like in my vague, all the shit I got bounced around in my mind, I thought you guys were still going to be gone. Or you were back a little bit early, though, right?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we gave ourselves, I mean, today at the absolute latest, but really yesterday was supposed to be our last day. So a couple days early, but surprising how fast that goes.
just how fast time in general goes.
Well, that, yeah. But then a hunt like that, it was like, we got a little behind schedule early, and it just goes by like a blur. Holy smokes. A lot of work.
Yeah. Well, do you put in for the tag more than once? Or is this just like one and done?
I don't know if everybody want to get into that. The locals here might get a little frustrated with me. But yeah, whatever. It was a fluke deal. We were sitting in goat camp last year, and the paper eggs came out. And the they had a Delta tag, and the misprint on there said non-resident, non-guided. And Mark's like, you got to apply for this.
Yeah, so when they did that Delta sheep tag last year, the paper eggs said non-resident, non-guided.
Oh.
It was just a misprint. That. Yeah. I remember that. Yes.
So I went home, I bought my license, and I tried applying for it. It wouldn't let me, so I called in, and they said, no, it was a misprint. Mm-hmm. It's next of kin, non-guided. So I was like, oh, I wasted my money on my tag. Mark's like, just apply for buffalo and bison, or bison and muskox.
Yeah. Yeah, since you have your license already, since might I as paid well for just
it.
Apply.
Right.
So I threw it in there, and yeah, a couple months later, he called me, just, you got to check online. He had already looked. He looked it up.
Oh, my God.
And I was at work, and I was like, no way. But yeah. I try not to tell people that because I get pretty frustrated.
Nah, whatever.
That's right. They'll get over it. Yeah, they're going to have to get over it because
it's just the way the draw works.
It's just the way it happens. That's
exactly right.
When you put in for all stuff that's like less than 1% chance of drawing, you can't ever expect to draw.
Right.
But somebody's got to get them, so it might as well be you, right?
Yeah, first time ever drawing a cool tag, so.
Yeah, that's cool. So you were talking earlier, you've been helping guiding for Mark for a few years now, huh?
Yeah, since 2017 I've been coming up here. Kind of got addicted to it.
It's easy to do.
Yeah. I've been trying to get my wife to move up here, but I don't know if I'll do it.
Has she come up here to visit yet?
Not yet. We got to get her up here in like spring, summertime. Can't bring her up here right now. She doesn't like
just
the cold.
throw a bunch of real fun stuff at her.
For winter, though, March is the time. Like, can be nice and wintry, but you got sunshine.
Yeah.
Sunny.
It's no doubt.
March is the time to show off winter up here.
Yeah. And we haven't had a bunch of snow melt, so it's still, you get some good aurora stuff.
Yep.
I don't know. I started hearing spring birds the other day.
Where were you?
Here.
You didn't hear shit.
Like what?
Well, I don't know. No, not threat. Not
you didn't hear any spring birds. I can tell you right now.
But it's
don't go too far into this.
All right. Well, I'll curtail that. So, but just some of those bird. Like it's a bird you hear in the morning a lot, where it's like three. It's like three notes. Faye thinks it was a yellow-crowned sparrow.
Mm-mm.
But it, like, I recorded it. I got an app that, like, identifies birds that I've, like, and been farting around with, and it didn't pick up anything.
Right. Your neighbor's got some birds. Maybe we'll call something in.
Yeah.
No, there's not, none of the, nothing is here yet.
Well, never mind.
Just a bird you hadn't heard for a
just
while.
Just a bird
you
I
thought
had.
It was cool.
I thought it was
cool. It was probably red poles. Do you know what red pole sound like? Have you got them on your thing?
Well, yeah, I've got them before. Like,
and it wasn't red poles?
No, it wasn't red poles.
Hmm.
It was some like real distinct like bird you hear in the morning sometimes that I usually associate.
Won't pick up.
My app won't identify. Oh, what a loser I am.
Well, I've heard those things work good.
They do work really good
I've
typically.
I've never actually used one.
Yeah. No, they work. I got a boreal owl the other night. I was like, oh, I heard two different kinds of owls, and the other one did hoot afterwards, because I know nothing about birds. So
you don't have to with the app.
With the app, it just tells you what it is. So, yeah, I was using it when I was in Kansas. So it's like all kinds of birds down there. I got juncos down there, which they're all over up here in the summer. But
seems like you got to wait till at least the end of March before you start getting any kind of change up. Every once in a while, like right at the very... Like the third week in March, sometimes stuff, like you get the right weather.
Yeah.
Summer stuff will start showing up, but normally it's like into April, especially the smaller birds.
Yeah, well, I guess that's...
Sorry to be Debbie Downer. So that's
ruin all your fun. For me tonight. Yeah, that's the most exciting thing I got. I've just been shooting a bunch. But, yeah, so you guys been planning, so it was last
draw cycle that you got us. You had a while to plan.
Yes, we had over a year to sit and think about it, and it, which helped because there's so much logistics into this hunt, right?
Yeah. Like,
we didn't know what to do for sleds or fly-in or whatever. And yeah, we ended up with three sleds. Mark had two. And we rented one from the neighbor guy. And then we were trying to figure out trailers because we got to pack all our gear in there.
Yeah.
Because you're on the Iditarod Trail.
Yep.
And we had no idea what to expect either. So we got three trailers and we packed all our gear on there. And yeah, I mean, we made it work, but we wrecked some stuff.
Yeah.
How many of you went?
Three of us.
Three of you went.
Yeah. So okay. Another kid, Hunter from Montana, who packs for Mark II, came with.
Okay, right on. Yeah. Right on. What kind of sleds did you take?
So I ended up buying two Expeditions, which is like kind of for this hunt, but not. I mean, we kicked the tires on.
You got them for the family. So.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I got them for the family.
Yeah.
Officially on the record.
Officially, they should be for the hunt.
That's right off. Yeah.
Right. On the record, they're for the family. But, I mean, having this hunt coming up pushed me over the edge. Because we're looking at, like, rental prices and stuff, or borrowing. And you feel bad borrowing for a trail like that when it's at least 200 miles one way, putting on serious mileage, and who knows how rough.
Sometimes just bare dirt some years anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, we dealt with that.
So I ended up buying two Expeditions. One was found a steel last spring. It was probably a good time that I was buying, like, in the spring, early summer.
Yeah.
So 2022, 600 days.
Nice.
And then in, like, October, I picked up a 2018, 900 days.
Right on.
So, and then we were able to borrow a really nice 2021 Expedition SE 900 Ace, like the all tricked out one.
The thing was like off the showroom floor,
which I couldn't believe. He
500 miles on it.
Oh no.
Yeah. No. Awesome.
I was surprised he loaned it to us, but at the same time, I mean, we paid pretty good money for it. But I was going to borrow one from another friend, and I was going to take it in to the shop to have it just like totally gone through service tune up. And we brought it in, and I waited too late for one thing. But we brought it in, and stuff was just falling apart. They're like, one of the pogos was basically missing all the bolts.
It was held on by like barely the plastic on. Cover.
It was a Scandic,
yeah,
and just loads of issues. And there was no way they could get parts.
Let like $2,800 worth of issues.
Do the work in the time that we needed. So I was scrambling. So I sent out a group text. Maybe
you. Yeah, I didn't reply to that.
Yeah. I wasn't surprised you didn't reply.
No, I think I just forgot. Like I just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those texts you look at when you're driving or something. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't.
I got caught up with my bird. Sorry, I didn't get back to you. I'm chasing
Pokemons.
Yeah. I didn't know what to expect, but wound up with a good option. So, yeah, was able to put three nice Expeditions together.
And then what did you use for like, toboggans, tow-behinds?
I bought a new CrossFox sled, the Arctic Sledworks / Alaska Gear Company, whatever they are now, that conglomeration.
They didn't give you a pair of bunny boots?
They did not. We tried. I think Chris might have applied for it.
No, I didn't. We should have, though.
He's not Insta-famous enough.
Send in a dance video or something. Exactly.
I voiced my opinion on this podcast about what I thought about that shit. You're not cool enough to get borrow a pair of our boots. You can only wear for 3 weeks and send back to us.
Yeah.
We used the OG bunny boots.
Yep.
Yeah, so we scrounged up some other bunny boots. For sleds, then so I bought an 8-foot, which... Buyer beware, when they say 8-foot, it's actually like 6.5, 7.
Because it's an 8-foot sheet of UHMW. Yeah.
Which I thought was complete malarkey, and I'm expecting 8 feet to use.
Yeah.
No dice.
I was a little crabby about that.
Yeah.
And I thought about bringing it back and getting the 10-foot / 9-foot.
Which, yeah, exactly.
But
did you get the, low side or high side?
The high side. The
yeah, right on.
Yeah, so we did that, and then we scrounged up a pretty nice, I think it's probably homemade, Siglin, but a nice burly 10-foot Siglin sled from a neighbor. And then borrowed another sled. Have you seen these Equinox trail boggins? They're narrow. They have a metal tongue. Somebody used to, maybe Compos used to sell them a long time ago, or some other shop.
Do they have like runners? Yeah. They have like metal runners?
No, they're not metal. Like
nylon runners.
Nylon runners.
Huh, interesting.
I feel like I've seen them, but I can't.
They're not built
Yeah,
for
so
the
they're
trail.
Narrow. They're like 7 foot by 20 inches or something.
Yeah,
like
not
that.
Even.
Yeah, so that. And that one. You'll hear in the story, I guess.
That one was a nightmare.
All sorts of trouble.
Dirt, it's narrow, huh?
Yeah. That thing was barrel rolling.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Did you have two of them tandem at all behind one machine?
No.
I've never done.
On top of another one behind one machine.
Right on.
Eventually, the last whatever 50 miles or something.
I've heard that two. I've never towed two before, but I've heard that two is awesome because when one's going up, the other one's going down all the time, and it really rides solid on the snow constantly, like all the time. Because when you have one, they're constantly just like pop, 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 back and forth and like pounding away. But when you got that, like always one, the other one is pulling the one down to the ground.
Yeah. So you'll be able to tell from our story, inexperience definitely showed, like, we just don't have experience with this type of trip. Winter camping, for one thing, I haven't done a lot of it, base camp style stuff, and just snow machine trips.
I'll show you
of tandem. That extent was not
digging in my old.
We just didn't have a lot of experience, and some of that probably showed both in what we packed and maybe how we packed it.
There's a tandem tow for you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it works really good.
Yeah. That looks like that almost. Isn't
yeah,
that
like
it? That looks just like that Equinox sled we had.
It's my little that first. That may be an Equinox. Yeah, I don't know. I was on a like winter trip with some guys, and one guy blew his motor up like 150 miles from anywhere, and we each had sleds.
Mm.
And so my little one lung Tundra, I had to do the tandem because he was. What he was pulling, the dead sled had a sled hooked up to it, and then the other guy with, at the time, it was just one of the 600 Scandic wide tracks
back in
the day. I mean, this is like more than 20 years ago. So I had to tow too. The little Tundra that could, where you got to get off and run alongside it, like going uphill.
Pushing.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot, like...
There's another dude in town, Jared Yoakum, that makes he's Tundra mules, and he makes them in his garage.
Is that
he's
the
got
one
a little
got?
Shop. That's what I got from him.
That's a nice sled.
Yeah,
they're like UHMW.
Yep, they're really nice. They're really well built, and they're a lot cheaper than the sled works.
Well, where were you a month ago?
You didn't call.
Yeah, so logistically, there was, just tons and tons of planning when you're looking at covering that much ground.
Just to get to where you're, like, going to start hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 200 miles from where you started to where you hunted?
Yeah, so you basically, you could just fly in and hunt. I think some people do, but then, obviously, you're limited with how much ground you can cover. So
yeah, with your snowshoes.
Yeah. The guys that I know who have done it said the best way they felt like to do it was to ride in on sleds and have air support in some form or fashion, whether flying in fuel, maybe flying in some gear, and then flying the animal out so you're not hauling it out
right on
250 miles or whatever. So more or less, that's what we planned to do. There was I guided sheep hunts in the area for other outfitters before, and I'd been to a strip with a big guide camp. They have nice weather ports and stuff. So that was one of the guys, one of the pilots we called early on. Chris called and he's always flying out there, so it was no big deal to have him. We're gonna have him stock 50 gallons of fuel for us, and then he was gonna fly it out for us when we're done. So
nice.
Yep. Yeah, and that ended up coming in handy for more than just that. We ended up using his camp a little bit on the way in and out. which is really helpful.
The weather ports are set up on that strip year round.
Yep. Okay, yeah, so right he's on. Got a year round lease, land use permit.
Yeah.
And they keep them there, and they got those little diesel heaters.
Nice.
Yeah, they saved our bacon the one night.
Yeah. They got all generator set up and stuff too, but they didn't. We didn't use any of that stuff. We just picked the smallest weather port and used that one.
Hmm.
So.
Did you bring a tent with you? An
we
Arctic
did.
Oven?
Yeah.
Yeah.
An Arctic oven and cots.
10 by 10.
10 by 10 with wood stove?
We took a wood propane. Stove just in case, but we took buddy heater.
You did?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yep.
Did you have the buddy heater set up on like a 20 pounder or did you bring little green bottles for it?
We brought two 20 pounders, a 5 pounder, and like 10 1 pounders.
10 1 pounders, right on.
Yeah. I think we overpacked a little bit, but.
How much of that did you come back with?
A lot.
Yeah. Okay, right on.
More than one full.
Yeah, we left all the 1 pounders at that camp there and then.
Yeah.
I think we didn't even use one 20 pounder the whole time.
Yeah. Never went through a whole time.
Stayed pretty warm, huh?
If you had to do it again, would you just go with a wood stove? Was there ample wood, and would it be easy enough?
There was definitely ample wood, but just the convenience of the buddy heater. I think I would stick with that.
And with three guys in that tent, like a wood stove, you lose so much room, right?
Yeah. Even with my 12, three guys in there in the wood stove, you're like, don't get burned.
Yeah.
So it was like... The buddy heater was kind of our primary heat source. And then we took not even one of the normal box stoves, but we took like a lightweight backpacking one.
Yeah, one of those like titanium fold down.
Yep. Yeah. So that was like our backup or if we needed to run it to dry stuff out.
Nice.
That the propane went to.
Because you obviously had a chainsaw with you. I mean, you're taking that, whether you're taking a wood stove or not.
You're in the burn, so everything's
burnable.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Firewood was no problem. By any means.
Yeah, shoot, you could probably even buck up just a warm-up fire if you got
cold
during the day, huh?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so the first day we went in, we were hoping to, we were really ambitious. We thought we'd make it to Roan, which is 180 miles-ish.
Yeah, yeah, so we poached information off Iditarod Trail because you're basically following the trail all the way in. And the hunt area is right off the trail, more or less. A bunch of burns out there. So we got a B&B in Willow the night before, and then, had ambitious plans to make it all the way to the hunt area.
We didn't make it too far down the trail. We made it to Yetna, right? Yetna? And then there was a bunch of Iditarod trail guys, and they stopped us, and they're like, hey, you guys lost a snowshoe back there, like three bends back. So we were like, crap. So I unhooked my sled, and I went flying back. Couldn't find the snowshoe. We ended up wasting probably an hour and a half trying to track down this stupid snowshoe.
Huh.
Yeah.
And then we just left it. So then they're like, you won't need it on the other side anyways. It's all wind blown. So then we didn't make it very far, and we got to Squintna at probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Something like that.
We just stopped in to see it mainly, and then these guys talked me into grabbing lunch, and then they're like, why don't we just stay here, right? We'll just hit it harder in the morning. And I'm kind of jumping at the pants, just ready to go, right? I got a tag that's opening tomorrow, and they're like, oh, we'll be fine. So then we stayed at Squintna that night, which was awesome. And then, we hit it hard the next day.
Yeah, well, part of that was since we had been kind of leapfrogging with the Iditarod Trail crew.
Yeah.
And we had heard the days prior there was a big windstorm and everything was blown in really bad,
kind of like letting them break the trail back out.
So I had a friend that was going in the day before us, and they actually turned around halfway because the trail was too bad. They were trying to haul freight though.
They lost
all right.
So they turned around and came out, and so since we were leapfrogging with the Iditarod Trail crew, we were like, well, why don't we just stop if the price is right at the Squintna Roadhouse? It would, for one thing, we know we're not making it to Roan today.
We realize that right away.
And then if the price was right, this would save us the setup and takedown time of camp and let the trail crew get ahead of us. So we stopped early, 3 PM, and it was super reasonably priced.
Yeah, and they're awesome there.
Yeah, really cool.
Awesome
really
food.
Cool people.
And then we were getting bored, so we asked her, like, can we do anything? She's like, yeah, well, you could go shovel some roofs. So
they had a ton of snow this year.
Yeah. Huh. So we like, shoveled snow off a bunch of cabins and lean-tos and stuff. And then, yeah, we went in, had a couple beers, and went to bed.
Yep.
But, yeah, they're good people there. Nice. Cindy owns that place. So then, yeah, we left pretty early. I woke these boys up really early. Topped off
it's fuel. Opening day.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mark likes to sleep in, so it's hard to get him going in the morning.
I'm not a morning person. No.
But yeah, we hit the trail hard, and I mean, we got to Rainy Pass, and it still took us a while to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we ended up we rode past one of their checkpoint camps, and the Roan checkpoint crew was there, which was at Finger Lake.
Yeah.
And talked to them, and they're like, the trail crew left like 3 hours earlier. So we're like, sweet, they're in front of us. But we, from Squintna Roadhouse to Roan was 102 miles, I think, something like that. 100 to 110 miles.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, 103, I think.
And we ended up catching the trail crew way sooner than we expected, unfortunately. We got caught behind the checkpoint crew for a while. We got behind them. They broke an A-arm right in the middle of a tight trail. We couldn't go around, but I mean, we weren't going to go past them anyways. We helped them get that situated. They're just going to roll with it and hope they could get a new A-arm sent in to Rainy Pass Lodge. So then probably, do you think it's halfway to Squintna to Roan that we passed the trail crew?
Yeah.
So we were kind of bummed that we passed them, but it was like, we're going to keep going. We're not just going to wait for you. So
were they pulling,
they
like pulling
further.
A bunch of groomers
and
stuff
groomers
like that.
Two groomers in the back, and then they're chopping wood and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
There's probably six of them in that group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big crew. So we passed them. Along this whole time, the Iditarod Trail Invitational is going on, if you know what that is. I did a sport, the foot race.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Iron Dog is before us.
Yeah.
So trail was broke from Iron Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some info from Iron Doggers. And then, but everything blowed in after them. And then there's the ITI, the foot racers, which the bikers made it all the way through.
Frank's like rolling his eyes. Early. Shaking his head.
Yeah, we felt pretty tough rolling in on snowmobiles. And then we're passing people like 200 miles in on foot. And we're like, what is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, those guys, I mean, they're tough. Maybe a little crazy.
No doubt about it.
Some of them are going 1,000 miles all the way to Nome.
What's your famous? That's a mental health problem.
They had like such little gear, too. Like their packs, they're pulling polk sleds, of course, but.
Right.
Like they're tiny. I mean, they're smaller than my sheet pack easily. They look like they weighed half of what.
Yeah, they're all the Hyperlite packs. And
yeah. Yeah.
And so we're cruising by them, and they're just suffering. And there was still...
Give me $1,000. Like, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was still fairly cold.
Want to win this thing?
Right. Like, have a guy sitting on the back of your sled backwards with a stick with like a piece of pizza hanging from it. Come on, you almost got it.
Ooh, not quick enough. Yeah. So we're passing those guys. So I think it was getting already to like late afternoon, evening when we got to like Rainy Pass Lodge, Puntilla. And that was another place you could stay, but it was like $300 a person per night. We weren't doing that. And Chris was anxious to get in there. So I had heard going over the pass, Rainy Pass, and down the Dalzell could be pretty squirrely trail.
Yeah.
So I wasn't excited about doing it in the dark or before the trail crew got in there and shoveled whatever needed to be shoveled. But we just sent it and went for it. Chris was leading the way, and he leaded us deftly through. It got dark probably right when we were in the top. So we went down the Dalzell Gorge in the dark. But the one place that really
just
needed to
stay in
to
the
be,
bottom and keep her pointed downhill.
Yeah. Well, and there's
the
one
wind
spot.
The was howling up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it so was, the drifting was bad.
Yeah.
And that's when that one skinny trailer was just getting annihilated. It was, I was behind, Hunter was pulling that when I was behind him. It was barrel rolling constantly. He had to stop all the time because it was like these icy, rock hard drifts that were just bouncing you this way, this way, this way, this way. And we're trying to cover time, so we're probably going faster than we should. But that thing was tossing and
turning. Did it matter when it was barrel rolling?
Could it everything just, like, tied in there?
Was good? It just like everything secured?
Everything somehow stayed in. It would be right like on. Riding upside down for a while, and it stayed in.
Did but anything we, get wrecked?
Yeah.
In there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there were all
as
those.
As long as it's not your rifle.
We had one of the very big, the longest, biggest
action
packer up front.
Yeah. That, and we had a big thing of fuel in there.
Yeah, so then the 30-gallon drum of fuel. So then the action packer was just getting wrecked. And finally the lid peeled off.
Yeah.
So then it was filling with snow.
But well, the lid was pushed back like 4 inches.
Even with those lids stay on, the new action packers are shit.
They fill
the
up snow
just like blows right through that lid on
we
those
spent
things.
Like $350 bucks worth of action packers, and I think we came home with two or three that are still good.
In decent shape. Yeah.
They're wrecked.
Yeah. They wear the bottoms of them. You're just like, you pick them up, and it's like like freaking cheesecloth that you're looking through.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. I know where you were at with that.
Yeah, so going down from the pass, there was only one spot that was squirrely, but it had been shoveled nicely where it's like it's cut into a steep slope of the ravine.
Mm.
So it's the trail's just shelved out, but it's, you know, it's 40 inches. It's the width of your skis. And you're
that's it. It's all you got.
You're riding hard on that high side, or you're tumbling down 50 feet into the creek.
Oh.
So that was, I mean, that was the most, the only really nervous spot. But aside from that, it was no big deal.
Just going.
Yep. So we made it down that, and then you get to, you drop onto the Tatina River, and it's like 3 miles to that big Roan checkpoint. So Roan, there's a big BLM cabin there, public use cabin, but they use it as a checkpoint. So we were hoping that we were ahead of the Iditarod crew, that maybe we could use that cabin.
Yeah, sneak in there.
Well, anyways, we got down and we went like a mile. We were probably 2 miles from Roan, and that trailer gave up, snapped one of the steel braces on the side, just snapped it off. And we ended up finding, we're like, we're messing with that, trying to fix it. And we're like, it smells like gas. And that fuel drum was cracked.
Yeah. Oh.
And it wasn't leaking a ton.
Just enough.
Yeah. So we ended up, while we're there, it's like 11 o'clock at night or whatever. So as we're fixing that trail sled, we siphoned as much fuel out of that, topped off all our machines to try to get that fuel level down below that crack. Just ratchet strapped that sled together enough to make it the last 2 miles.
Smack it a couple times so that'll hold.
Yeah, basically. So then we limped that down there and went to...
What kind of fuel drum was it? Was it one of those white plastic 30-gallon drums?
No, it's a pretty heavy-duty, seemingly heavy-duty, but I think
black
big
plastic.
Plastic.
Yeah, all right.
Like Arctic Fire and Safety sells them.
Yeah, I know exactly the
but
one you're
talking borrowed
about.
Two from a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at Arctic Fire and Safety, and they're like, shocked how expensive they are. Because a lot of people also use those blue 15, 20-gallon drums, which you can pick up.
They're pretty thin, though.
Places. Yeah.
I get the white ones for my boat, and they're thin, too, but a boat and a
the square,
toboggan
the
behind
square
the sled
ones
is
do
different.
Seem to be, like, the most rigid. I've got some, like, clear ones, and I've got, I know my, the I turned one into my gas tank for my boat, one of the black
That's what
square
my neighbor
ones.
Had used.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, like, 35 gallons. They're square.
I have those 15, the metal 15s.
Mine's 15. Yeah.
I have little metal 15s that are round.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
you're
nice.
Not going to go wearing through those things.
Oh, right.
They look like a 55-gallon drum, except for their 15s.
Just don't leave them in the sun.
It's got
in the summer.
Just a single bung in the middle.
Mm, nice.
Yeah,
I don't know if the cold had something to do with it, too, because it was so cold. It was negative 20.
Yeah.
And the wind was blowing, and then that thing barrel rolling on the rocks, right? It probably just punctured
Annihilated it. Yeah. I've done the same thing. One of the first trips that I ever took, a winter trip myself, I had 5-gallon jugs, and I never smelled it. Lucky you guys smelled it, because you lose a lot of gas fast. I never smelled it. And we got to where we were and set the Arctic oven up. I just took all my extra fuel and set it to the side and was like, okay, well, I'll run until I can put it all in. And we were like far enough away that I was like, I'm going to need all this fuel. And when I came back to the point where I was like, oh, I'm going to fill everything up. You know, when you pick up full of gas, I almost punched myself in the mouth when I picked the one up and there was no gas in it. It was all gone. Jeez. Everything was gone, 5 gallons. And I was like, well, I don't have enough gas to get back now.
That's brutal. Yeah, I bet we saved probably 90% of it at least.
That's I think so.
That's legit. Because
we took
right
that
on.
Top breather bung off, laying sideways, and it was still squirting fuel out. So we had to tip it up to get the siphon hose in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we lucked out there.
We got it. So when we topped off the machines, we got that. The level on that, if we left it upright, that crack was probably 2/3 from the top. So we got it below that crack for the rest of the way. And then as it turned out, like we siphoned the rest out. Into other containers whenever we topped off a couple days later. And we think we got 30 gallons out of it.
Yeah, it was really close.
So anyways, that night we roll into hoping we can use that cabin. And we roll in there and the ITI
It was like a
checkpoint
battlefield
leaders
there.
Oh
yeah.
And then the ITI are laying everywhere.
Because they're technically not allowed to use the cabin. But their checkpoint people are all living in there, and they have to sleep outside.
Huh. So they got all their shit inside, and then they're, like, sleeping outside?
But the people, the checkpoint people can stay inside the cabin, so it was full of people. And so we were like, screw it. We just got to go find somewhere else to camp. And we knew about the camp up the road a little ways. So we were just going to go drop our gear there and maybe set up our tent. And we got there, and we pulled that first tote out with a buddy heater in it.
The Action Packer.
The Action Packer had the buddy heater in it, and it was packed with snow. And we're like, what do we do now?
And on the top of it was
The lantern.
We had the lantern in there, and all I'm pulling, like, pieces of the lantern. You know, the top of the lantern,
everywhere.
The base of the lantern. Where's the lantern? The glass just annihilated.
Oh, yeah.
So there's glass, shredded, mixed snow through everything.
Excellent.
The buddy heater, like the buddy heaters packed with it. And that was like a lot of our camp equipment, you know, other than the tent and stuff. So all that stuff was just thrashed. And so that's when we like checked in the weather ports and we're like, sweet, I think we can stay here.
Yeah.
There's cots, there's the diesel heater, there's another buddy heater.
So you could at least thaw yours out.
We got that stuff fired up and just rolling. And we're like, we'll just crash in here tonight, right? And we got our buddy heater out and we thawed it out. And I messed with it and messed with it. And finally got it lit. And the pilot light would lit. And then it would just explode, the whole thing. Boom! And he's got videos
video
of it. It's like,
it did it like 3 or 4 times.
Shooting out. And finally I was like, I got to tear it. So I tore the bottom of it apart. And one of the fittings going down had loosened up. So all the fuel was dumping out the bottom. And then it would blow up out of the bottom.
Shit.
So we got that fixed, and the next day it was running, ripping. So, yeah, we crashed there that night.
At least you got it fixed. That's huge.
Yeah.
Heat sources.
Yeah,
fucked.
We were kind of worried for a while. And I text the guy who we were using his shelters, and he's like, yeah, I got a buddy heater in the kitchen if you want to use it. So,
right on.
But, yeah, we ended up getting ours running again, which was cool.
They make Streamlight, makes lights that I use in my Arctic oven. 3D cell batteries, no glass.
Oh, nice.
Coast. Well,
quiet. There's no all the time.
But probably no heat, though.
Very nice.
No,
no. Not from the lantern.
The one I got one that's very similar, but like Coast. I just saw one at Home Depot the other day. But same thing where you can, it like looks like a lantern and you could hang it up normally, but like yours,
mine,
you can screw the. Like the closed
the lamp
like
part
lamp
off.
Part off, and it just has the light, and you just hang it upside down from the
no
top.
Heat though. You're right.
No heat. Yeah.
But it'd be nice not to have it breakable.
That's exactly right.
I didn't put out heat. In there.
Batteries are easy.
Yeah,
it wasn't
heating after that.
Yeah, no. Exactly. There you go.
Right.
Yeah. Luckily, we had my little solar power inflatable lantern too, so we just used that.
One of those. It crushes down flat. Yep. I have one of those at my cabin. Those things are awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, super handy. Yeah, so we stayed there that night, and then the next day we kind of made a plan. Basically, from there, I mean, all the intel says you can start hunting there more or less. Like, people see bison starting around there. Like, okay. You can see them. Yeah. You're right on the south upper South Fork of the Kuskokwim. So there could be some further up the South Fork. But from Roan, you know, clear to McGrath, more or less, mm-hmm. you can hunt. So we were just getting into the hunting area. So that next day, we basically decided to do more or less a scouting day. There was another, the only other public use cabin was from there.
Bear Creek, so like 45 miles.
Yeah, 45, 50 miles. So we were kind of thinking maybe we'll bomb all the way there. And if it's not, if nobody's using it, maybe we'll claim it if we want to. But we'll also be scouting slash hunting.
And just like haul all your stuff with you, and then you could change plans if you ran into.
Well, we debated that. We're like, do we take all our stuff and we'll camp if we don't make it? We decided not to, right?
Because we were down a sled too still. So
yeah, so we lost that sled. So we decided to go a little bit lighter.
Did you just take everything out of that and pack the other ones even with more shit? Next,
we packed just sleeping bags and stuff. Just like if we did snag that cabin, we could live in that cabin.
No, yeah, but when you lost that other toboggan, what did you do with the stuff that was in that?
We kept it. We just ratchet strapped it, the tongue on, and then limped it down to this place.
Oh, okay. So it was there at that. Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Yep. So that next day we did. We put on some miles, but not near as much as we expected to.
No.
I think we got a later start than expected, and then it was...
The trail got gnarly.
Yeah, there's way less snow there, and it was like straight dirt, just running gravel dirt.
For how long?
Really, really rough.
Like 20 miles?
Fucking gravel and dirt?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yep.
Which we had heard from Iron Dog. They had 20 miles or so of dirt. So we just did some rooting around. We ended up finding a bunch
of... Two-stroke, you're out of luck. Yeah. It seems like, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Just overheat if you don't have... Yeah,
the wrong
you
liquid cool. Well, like the 600s and 900 aces, like some...
My sled would overheat.
Depending on the condition, my sled, you start heating up your Hyphax, like melting your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, damaging your tracks.
No bogey wheels.
Yeah,
these new sleds are impressive.
Yeah. You replaced the Hyphax on the sled we borrowed before we left, which is good. It's a good thing you checked that. Well, so that day, I mean, that trail sucked so much that we decided to find a way down to the river to see if there's a river trail.
Yeah. Like
we assume maybe the river, it shows some sort of trail on the map, but... we went down there. We couldn't really find a trail and not much for tracks. But everything was... there had been a nice cold snap before we went. So everything was froze up pretty good. You could have kept traveling the river, but we would have run into open water somewhere.
It's just eerie, too.
That shit's sketchy. I hate rivers.
Especially a river you don't know.
Yeah, when you don't know
I don't even
it.
Care if I know it. I'm on way.
You're not that experienced anyways. We went like a couple miles and we're like, let's go back.
You're riding and all of a sudden it's hollow underneath you.
We went back.
Don't stop.
That shit scares the daylights out of me.
Yeah. So we ended up going back to the dirt trail, scouted a little bit, found a bunch of tracks, including some nice big looking bull tracks.
Big tracks.
And then we decided to just bail back to that camp and camp there because we're not making it all the way to that cabin. And weren't just going to bivy out. So went back to the camp. And then after that, we hauled all our camp with us. We're like, we want to get in here, camp somewhere centrally located.
Because we'd gotten into
a little
bit of
sign. So this is like after 3 days now? So that was that like your third
that
day?
Was our third day,
second day of open season.
Gotcha.
So the second. And I'm starting to get anxious already, right? I haven't even seen a buffalo. I thought there was just going to be buffalo everywhere.
like they'd shoot them from the train.
Right? Like, they must be here. Look at that pile of skulls over there.
We had no idea what to expect. And I was just like, oh, man, we got to start doing something. So, yeah, next day we packed everything up, the tent, and we just compacted it into those two sleds. And then we made it to where we left that night before, where the tracks were, and we just started going real slow and glassing and checking everything.
Pretty wide open.
It's all burned. Like, there's like a string of burns together. So it was all burned stuff. So it was all just burned timber. So not wide open.
But you could see okay.
Yeah. So we'd just stop every half decent vantage point.
Just the terrain is what screwed you.
Yeah.
There's little benches everywhere. And there's no way to get up there unless you hike up there. That could be anywhere.
Yeah. So we'd stand on top of the sleds, take a quick glass around, whatever you could. Pretty quick looks. Like, we weren't doing any serious glassing.
I would imagine, having seen bison before, if they're country like that, they're so dark, they kind of stick out like a sore thumb if they're where you can see them.
Yeah. Right. And the sign kind of petered out after there for a while. So, we knew, there was no sign on the trail anymore. So, we just kept rolling, and finally, we got down to Farewell Lake.
Yeah, there's kind of a series of lakes. So, you're crossing ice every once in a while, a series of lakes, and Farewell Lake is the biggest one. We got to there. And there was a trail that looked like it, on the map, cut over to the west towards, Farewell Airport and stuff. And we had known there were some cabins there. And so two of us were going to try that trail. And we sent Hunter to go bomb all the way out to Bear Creek Cabin and check on it, just in case, and scout. So he's going to cover big miles. We were going to inspect this trail. And that trail ended up to be not a trail.
No.
At least it hadn't.
Nothing at all?
Not on the map.
Not for many, many years. It hadn't been used.
We tried a couple spots with trailers, and it was just we can't make it through here. So we were backing up and turning around. We tried two spots. And we couldn't poke through. So we got back to the lake, and we just started running the lake around the edges because we were paralleling the trail kind of. And we're like, there's got to be a way to get up in there. And then we found that old camp, the burned down camp.
There's an old camp with an airstrip by it that used to be, it's marked as a lodge, I think, on the topo map. I think it says Farewell Lake Lodge.
Yeah.
But it's it was old school, burned up. They had a big yurt on there and all kinds of stuff. There's a lawnmower out there.
why not?
Bulldozer.
Unbelievable amount of trash.
Yeah. Garbage everywhere.
Field drones. Classic.
A backhoe parked in the trees. Bush.
Yep.
Yeah, we were hunting giant, in the 50s. giant trucks in the trees.
Yeah.
Trees growing through them.
It's crazy what you can find out there.
That's wild. It's crazy the motherfucker that drove that shit there.
Right. Yeah, so we did that and kept going around the lake looking for tracks and stuff.
Yeah, and then we were almost all the way to where we were going to lose that trail because we were paralleling it. And then all of a sudden we saw all these snowmobile tracks going up and in there. And we're like, well, that's got to be a new spot. So we went up in there and we looked and we just walked up there. And all of a sudden we found the trail. It was perfectly wide open.
Nice.
So we went down to the sleds and then we heard sleds coming back. And these three dudes popped out and they ended up being the other guys with the tag in there. So we sat and bullshitted with them for quite a while. And
I was just about to ask. Did you run into any other people with a tag?
We got their information and everything, and they were camped right on the other side of that lake. So we got their numbers and everything, and we're like, okay, well, we know we can get in there now. And we just kind of headed back, and Hunter was all the way down at Bear Creek then, and he's like, sign peters out. He's like, there's moose everywhere, no buffalo sign. There's a couple of people at the cabin. We could stay here, but he's like, I don't like the area down here. He's like, I think it's way better up there. So me and Mark headed back to find a place to set up a tent, and we found a perfect spot, but it was just all ice everywhere. Nowhere to pound stakes in, right? So we kept looking and looking. Finally, we found a spot by open water because we wanted the water so we didn't have to melt all the snow. So we set up, and it was still a bugger to get the stakes in. But we got camp set up, and we were probably 2 miles from that entrance then, that trail?
Yeah, 2 to 3.
So yeah, we set up camp there, and Hunter came back, and yeah, then I was starting to get kind of nervous, right? It's day three, and I haven't seen a buffalo. And I'm just thinking, man, what are we doing here?
I was like, dude, we got all kinds of time. Yeah.
We've spent a year thinking about this stupid tag. And,
I love it.
Oh, man.
There was tracks everywhere. Yeah. we got
the twitch going.
I could see this everywhere. Because Mark's like pretty like even keel, level-headed. I could see the whole like, dude, what are you freaking out about?
And he wants to sleep in every morning. And I'm like, we got to go.
Oh, yeah. Man.
So, yeah, we just planned on next day. We're like, we're going to load up. No sleds, no nothing. We're just going to load up our snowmobiles and ride in, right? So we loaded up and we headed in there. Super light. It was awesome not towing trailers for the first day.
Mm-hmm.
They just beat the crap out of you over those bumps.
Like you said, the bumps when that thing snaps down.
Oh, man.
And there was so much of that.
Yeah.
So much of the little up and down.
Iron Dog tears that trail. That's what it is, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys riding on thing. It.
All the moguls.
Yeah. Tough pulling those things.
Hmm. So, yeah, that was the day four of opener, and we just started riding in there, and it was cool country. We got in there, and you could see forever then. And we just stopped and glassed, and someone told me St. John Hill was a good spot. It's a big hill that overlooks everything. So our goal was to make it to there. And we were going, and it's probably 15 miles back in there.
Yeah, to that St. John Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we don't need to worry about name dropping. That's,
well,
good luck getting the tag.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll give all the landmarks.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, you're going to find them where they are. But it was probably noon and we weren't quite there yet. We just had been looking. Like, we saw a ton of moose.
Well, we talked to the other hunters too. We coordinated with them.
We stopped by their camp in the morning.
So you guys aren't like up each other's asses all the time. You cover more ground too.
Because they had been in there first.
Right.
And we're like, where are you guys planning on going? They're like, well, we went left at this turn and we saw a bison back there. And they're like, we want to go to the next one. And we're like, okay, well, we're going to head way to the back. Get out of your way. And we just want to keep exploring.
So they had already seen animals. Yeah, that day you must have been excited at least to hear that.
So then they were heading these ridges to the left. And they were heading up there, and we're like, okay, we're going to stay out of their hair. Let's just keep mobbing past there. Let's get to the airport and check out the St. John Hill. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we got all the way in there, and there's wolf tracks everywhere back there. I've never seen so much wolf sign in my life.
Which we were warned.
And he's like, no, they ate all the mice.
No.
Nothing but carcasses for miles.
Yeah. Which we had been told that there's tons of wolves in there, so be ready. But that whole trail for that 10, 15, whatever miles, it was just wolf tracks.
Everywhere.
Back and forth, cruising that trail like crazy. But we saw a bunch of moose.
Yeah, we ran into a herd of like probably 10 moose.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. They missed them, so I was like, I need new guides. Right off the side of the road.
Damn, my guide just drove right by all these animals.
Yeah.
What if those were bison?
Yeah. Kill the ptarmigan. Yeah. Just shot a ptarmigan.
Yeah, I brought my little Mark IV with my Thunder Beast suppressor on there, so that was fun. But yeah, we got way back in there, and the whole day before and this day too, Hunter wouldn't wear his binos. And me and Mark are glassing everyone, he'd just stand there. And he'd been hunting buffalo in Montana for a couple months because his wife drew that Montana tag, and we're like, what, are you don't want a glass?
Or the only guy that's ever seen one ain't even looking for
So we started calling him Bluetooth because like, he didn't have his binos. Are you Bluetoothing him? He's like, you guys, when you see him, you're gonna see him. They're not hard to see. And we're like, well, what if they're in the trees over there?
Yeah.
Well, I started joking with him that he was maybe depressed. I was like, everything okay at home? Everything good with your wife, your kids, like your job?
We were giving him a hard time.
I mean, he's one of those, like, he's a glass Nazi. Like, he acts like an Arizonan.
Oh, yeah. Like
when he's sheep hunting with me, he's always on the glass. He's always first one on it. Glass on, tripod. Dialed.
I'm in trouble now because Frank just got a set of matching binos to he's been handicapped by his Nikons for years. No. Now he got a set of Swaro, EL ranges like me.
Nice.
Yeah, I got to even the playing field, even though it didn't need evening.
Nice. So, yeah, he wasn't even wearing them. He'd ask us to look through ours once in a while. Like,
did he have them with him?
Oh, yeah, they're in the back in the snowmobile.
So he's like, you're gonna just see him. Whatever.
Yeah, we were hounding him. And yeah, we got almost to that St. John Hill. We got to the airstrip. And we kind of petered around. There's some old cabins and stuff. And then there was like this 2-3 mile stretch, just straight trail to the St. John's Hill. And we're just cruising it. And it's kind of trees on both sides. And that hill just looked awesome. And there was a trail going all the way to the top. We're like, we're going to be able to see for miles once we get up there. And we're probably 500 yards from the base of it. And I hear Hunter screaming at me back there. And I look back and he's like, right there, right there. And of course, he's the one that finds them.
No, by now. Yeah. He's like, told you. They should have left them at home.
So they're out in the field on the left. There's a big herd of them. And you could barely kind of see them going through the trees. And Mark was up ahead
were
of
them. Were they like moving fast because they heard you or whatever? They were just kind of grazing along.
Grazing.
Right on.
They're probably 600-700 yards away still. Okay. So they had no idea.
No clue that you were
and the wind
there.
Was ripping. So then we caught up to Mark and we're like, there's buffalo right out there. And we're like, let's get to the top of the hill and we'll just be able to get a whole lay of the land, see what's out there, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried getting up there and we got halfway up and like it got so sideways. And Mark's sled was sliding down. And we're like, we can't make it up here with these tractors, right? They're not mountain sleds at all.
No.
So we turn around. We're like, we'll go to the bottom. We'll just hike around the base and see if we can find them again. So we got down there and we kind of loaded up our packs with just puffy gear. And I load up my rifle and Mark's taking 14 hours to get ready because he doesn't know what to take. I'm gone. So I just started hiking. Hunter's right behind me and Mark caught us pretty fast.
How much snow? Like you're hiking, did you have to put snowshoes on or could you just like cruising?
It was probably a foot and a half of snow. But then you'd hit like ice ledges and you're just walking over them.
All right.
Yeah. So it wasn't bad at all.
Then it was just kind of tundra.
Yeah. So then
like
we got
wind blow. It was all like blown off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right on.
So we got out into the edge of the trees and I found them. They were all bedded at this point. And they looked like they were right there. And I ranged them. They're 970 yards. I'm like, holy smokes. So then we're kind of trying to figure out a game plan. I'm like, how do we get out there? And there's just a couple little teeny trees here and there and like little snow drifts.
Like nothing to hide behind.
Yeah, and we're like, well, let's just start picking our way out there. And we just got in a single file line, and I just kept bookieing out there, and we'd make it to one, and then we were like 700 yards. And then we got to like 650, and the next tree was 400 yards away. And we got to there, and I was like, I can shoot 400 all day long.
This type of stuff.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God.
You can see their dark clouds
out
there.
Absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Nice mountain backdrop.
Awesome.
But it was shockingly flat there.
Yeah, super flat.
So, like, there was no cover, really. And we didn't know
if they're spooky,
And so if you don't know, you sure as shit, you're like, we got them finally. Like, don't fuck this up.
Yeah. So then we got to 400, and I got set up, and the wind was blowing so hard. I'm shooting on my tripod because we're kind of in the grass. And I got set up, and I'm like, I just don't feel comfortable with the wind blowing this hard, you know?
What were you shooting for a rifle?
I have a Christensen 300 Win Mag. I mean, I got good glass on it, but that's about it. I don't trust Christensen.
Well, doesn't matter if it's blowing 40 miles an hour. It's just like,
I go shoot steel with that thing 850 all day, right? I'm not going to shoot anything that far, but 400 all day. But I didn't feel comfortable just the way it was moving. With
the wind, it was probably 30 gusts.
Yeah, 35. Yeah,
that makes a big difference.
And it's coming straight sideways at us. So I'm like, we got to see if we can get closer.
At 400, that's blow even a 30 cal bullet. Yeah. That'll blow it pretty substantially.
Yeah, and it was just blowing me, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're like, look, there was nothing at this point in between us. There was one teeny tiny little tree, and like, we kind of thought about it for a while, and we're like, well, it is only day 4, right? It's the first herd we've seen. Let's just see what we can do. And I'm like, we got to get closer.
Yeah, like if we bust them, is it a big deal? Yeah. We don't know for sure that there looks like one, maybe bull.
That was what I was just going to ask. How many were there?
Well, there ended up being
25-ish. Yeah. Okay.
Well, we couldn't tell because they were all bedded and you could barely see them in the long grass.
Okay, right on.
And looking through the spotter, we could only see one giant back. And we're like, that looks like a good bull, but like we couldn't tell.
Just because it looked like it was much bigger than the other ones.
Like that back was just sticking out of the ground. Mm-hmm. So like I was like, let's get closer. And we just inched forward real slow, kind of creeping. And they had no idea. And we got to 275.
We sat somewhere around 300-ish.
And I was like, let's just get to 200. My gun's dialed at zero.
I love it. 200. That's awesome.
I'm like, let's push the envelope here. And we just crept up and I counted paces and we got right to 200 and we just sat down and they had no idea. Or we didn't know if they just didn't care
yet. You know,
mm-hmm.
they saw us, but didn't really care.
Did they seem like they were looking at you or anything, or just they had no idea you were even
no
there?
No idea.
Like there'd be two or three standing at a time milling around, but didn't.
And they're facing us, so like,
look alert.
We didn't know, like, do they not care? Do they not see us?
What's their eyesight like?
Yeah.
They probably get harassed by them wolves constantly.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we thought. So we were
and
like,
everyone we talked to said, don't leave your snow machines. They're like, don't leave your snow machines.
Like, you'll never catch them. Just stay on your machines no matter what. Kill one from your machine.
Interesting.
But we left it 1,000 yards ago.
First thing we did, left it.
Exactly.
So, I got set up, and I felt really good at that yardage, and we still didn't know, like, is that thing a bull? Is it just a big, what is it? Like, we were kind of worried about sexing them, but, like, we figured it wouldn't be that hard. But we still never got a good solid look at it. Like their bed and the grass is kind of like right at their eye level. And a couple of them got up, milled around here and there. And we sat there for probably 45 minutes and we started getting cold. And we left our packs back there, our puffy gear. And Mark's huddling under his little pad that he sits on.
I had the Z-Rest pad, and I'm like blocking the wind with it. We were just freezing. So we're like, we can't do this much longer.
So I'm like, we gotta either get them to stand up or we got to do something. And we started kind of yelling, but the wind was blowing so hard, there's no way they could hear us.
Holy shit. Yelling.
So finally, we're like, Mark, just stand up, do some jumping jacks. You're cold anyways, and warm up a little bit. And so Mark stands up, and he kind of just stretches his arms above his head. And all of a sudden, it was like, boom, 3-4 of them snapped up. And we're staring straight at us. And me and Hunter are like, okay, they see us. So Mark bails down. And I'm on the gun, right? And I'm ready. And all of them got up then, except for that one. And then he's just bedded there.
Holy shit.
And then we're kind of like, okay, they know we're here now. And all of a sudden, he kind of rumbles up. And he stands up. And they're like, there's no doubt about it. That's a bull. And they're like,
it was that much bigger than all the other ones, huh? Yeah.
And they're like, do you like it? And I'm like, that's a big boy. And he was kind of quartering to us too hard, and I didn't really want to put one through his front shoulder. So we didn't know at this point what they're going to do yet, so I'm like waiting.
He's like right between the eyes.
Yeah. And we probably had 10 seconds. He probably stood there for 10 seconds quartering to us, and then it was game over. Gone. They ran.
Stampeded.
Really?
So we were like,
all of them at once just
all
lit
of
out.
Them,
gone.
And it was like a
holy
snowstorm
shit
behind them. These guys thought it was game over.
Hunter
like,
and I
in my
like,
video,
oh,
there were some explicitives going on.
We're like, oh, it's over. And at first, we decided we didn't care if they ambushed or if they stampeded because we didn't even know this was a shooter. But once it stood up.
And you're like, oh, man.
It was like twice the size of anything else.
You're like, shoot him.
Then
shoot
we're
him.
Like,
shoot him.
Then we're like, no, it's all over. They're running away.
So their hopes and dreams are crushed.
We're all dejected.
Me. And I'm still tracking this thing. Awesome. And, like, it was kind of weaving in and out. And all of a sudden, he got clear, and he's out in front. And I snuck one in there. And it was like, boom! And they're like, oh, shit, we're still doing this!
How far had they run?
So I scramble for my
probably
binoculars.
25 yards.
Like, oh, I got it.
Oh, they didn't go that far.
No, they were cruising, but, like, I was right on him.
They were angling probably away at, like, what would you say? Like
they were quartering away
30-degree angle away, kind of.
And I was following him, and I
and the equations are like like Rain Man in his head.
No, and I snuck one in there, and it was right behind the back quarter, so it went in. But I think the guts are so big on those things; I think it just gut shot it because we couldn't find anything off the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But then it got it to slow down, and it stopped at like 300 yards.
So Mark's yelling. So I scrambled to get my binoculars up and find
it. Thought it was game over.
And there were still
there's no video of this because Hunter shut the phone off.
Everything's done. Because they stampeded. They're gone. Shit.
And I'm still tracking this thing.
I love it.
I'm
That's
like, I'm
so
not letting
awesome.
It get away.
So I relocated it, and I was like, it's in the middle of the group, and then I'm clicking,
and
trying to get a good range, and it moved to...
It was not hard to see. This thing was big.
Middle of the group, but on our side,
yeah.
Clear flank, and I was like, 290, 295, because they're at like a gradual angle. Mm-hmm. And so finally, when it kind of stopped and the rest of them cleared, it was like right at 300. I'm like 305, whatever. I told Chris, and he punched it again. Good, solid hit. And then one more.
Where did you hit him the second shot?
It was like right behind the pocket, a little high, but like I didn't know at the point. Because like I'll tell you after we butchered it, but like the top 2 feet of those things are just like their fin bones above the spine.
Right. Were you up in that or were you
no,
down?
No, I was
you
down.
Were lungs.
I double
so you
lunged
got lung.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
Double lunged it for sure. And it went through, ended up going through the onside rib and through the offside shoulder.
All right.
Both shots were just like within this tight of a group, which I should have been aiming lower, but I didn't know.
Hmm.
So then he couldn't go. Like his offside shoulder was gone and he's just hobbling there. And I saw wind shooting out my second shot.
I love seeing that shit.
I saw the wind come out. I'm like, oh, he's done.
Dead.
But he was still up, so I put a third one in him. Mm-hmm. And then he dropped, and he was done.
Yeah, so you ended up finding both those, right, in the stand?
Yeah, so I'm shooting 181 hammers, those hammer hunters, and I love those things.
So do they
the
peel
front
off?
Pedals, yeah, like they pedal off a little bit, and then it just holds all that mass through.
I don't know if I had where the other piece of that one went.
Yeah, that front peels.
Like yeah,
but then the rest is
stay
because they look like open. They look pretty much the same to me. And like,
but none of them went through.
No, which I've
three
all,
shots.
I've
none
killed
of
a lot of stuff
through.
With those hunters, those hammers, and everything blows through.
But oh, like, really?
I hit a onside rib and an offside shoulder. On
that's,
but we found both.
Yeah. Those are from...
No, they're teeny, teeny, tiny particles that blow off. I bet there's 90% of the bullet left at the end of it.
Interesting.
Those hammers. But then, yeah, we found both of them on the offside hide, just tucked in the hide. Mm-hmm. So it didn't quite go all the way through, but, I mean, it used all of its energy.
I was just going to say it did what it was supposed to do.
But, yeah, when we were butchering it, like, at the scheme of things, like, the heart and the lungs are, like, probably a foot up front. Right in that pocket, they're tall
they're,
and skinny.
Like narrow. Yeah.
Super narrow.
Hmm.
Like, it's just the rest is just guts.
Huh.
Their guts are huge. I was surprised. I was surprised at the ratio, I guess, of the guts.
When you got into it, that the diaphragm's punch. Way up,
way up
forward.
Front. Way
huh?
up front. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, the lungs were just completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. But then the heart is probably, I'd say, 6 inches from the bottom. It's
really
way
low.
Down there.
Hmm.
So, like, and then the top 2 feet, yeah, like we said, the spine comes off the head, and then they have these fin bones that are probably 2 feet tall.
That makes
on their,
up
that's
their,
what makes
yeah.
their shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just full of meat.
What's the heart, the size of the heart, compared to, like, a moose?
Oh, it's big.
Is it bigger than a moose's heart, or like about that? The same size?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not a moose killer.
You'd have to ask Tyler.
I'm always guiding goats
shit.
Then.
Oh, no
I've
shit.
I've killed one, but.
Did you look at the heart?
Just in the FMA.
Huh.
I would say it was bigger, but that was a what I shot was a year and a half year old.
Yeah, moose is like it's not
like
the
that.
Size of a
it's
basketball, but it's
that.
Like that's yeah, exactly. It's like I don't know. It's like
we ate
different.
It the other day.
Yeah, that's really close
that
to
the
size the
same,
of a
yeah.
size of a moose heart. Right on.
Yeah, we cooked it up and it fed six of us, and we've used half of it.
Nice.
It was big.
Right on. First meal.
Yeah.
That and testicles.
Yeah, we
nice.
Cooked the testicles up.
My boys How got a they? Kick out of that. All
oh,
they
yeah.
could think, all, like the whole dinner, they're like, "You're eating the nuts."
balls. Were they good?
They were good.
They
yeah.
were.
Yeah.
Chris, yeah, whipped something up.
I just broiled them and then got the skin off, and then I sliced them and then breaded them.
mm-hmm.
and then fried them. It was almost like a calamari smell.
Oh, I've had elk them. Like really? Deep fried calamari.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Mm. It was like no it was like a fishy shit. Smell almost.
Huh?
But they were good. They were really good.
Yeah,
well, semen, yeah,
really good
fish. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
little swimmers.
We even got his wife to eat them. And yeah,
yeah,
it was cool. But yeah, so they're so big, you got to take those too, right?
You need everything on this thing.
Yeah. Well, while we were out there, though, we had some tenderloin.
Yeah.
And we just did that over the fire on sticks. And
it was so tender, it was hard to keep it on the stick.
Oh, wow.
Yep. No shit.
Because everyone says they're so tough, right? The buffaloes are so tough.
Well, I mean, they're a tough animal. I've always heard that the meat is just, like, ridiculously good.
Yeah.
I mean, I've the flavor, eaten some. Yeah. Nikia's shot some, you know, but they're not, like, well, I've eaten bison, like, plenty of it, but not a farewell bison or not, like, a Delta bison.
You don't go out to a restaurant and see, like, bison steaks on the menu. It's all bison burger.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people say that just, they're tough. Hmm. The meat's tough, but it's good flavor.
Yeah, I don't know. What would Tony's kid... Got his bison. He brought the backbone over, and we cut it up on the saw, and he gave me a couple steaks. It was good.
Right on.
And I don't think it helps that it flash freezes instantly, right? So cold.
That doesn't. It's called hot boning, and it, fuck. I mean, I killed a moose in the winter, and it was the most horrible shit like bubble gum. Mm-hmm. Tastes awesome. It's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you call
it? It's called hot boning.
I heard it called cold shortening or something like that.
So, it's what happens is what the deal is, this butcher dude that I know told me that, and it didn't happen. Anything that I left on the bone was fine. But anything you take off the bone, it freezes so quickly that it constricts, like, all the back strap and tenderloin stuff.
Because it doesn't give it a chance to, like, settle out.
Slowly, exactly, and relax.
Yeah.
So, and it's just like, wham, and it just freezes up so quickly, and it just will never relax. Mm. Stuff on the bone can't do it because the bone holds the meat, like, from, like, tensing up when it freezes.
Yeah, because we were looking for the tenderloin. Because we had all the loose meat and a bunch of big bags, and I thought I found it, but it ended up being like a big chunk of neck meat or something. And we tried cutting that up, and it was like the marbling in it was just perfect.
It looked really, really good.
And then we tried tenderizing it, and we couldn't get it to do anything. It was so hard.
No shit.
So then we ended up just cutting the heart up to eat for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. So it'll be interesting.
I've tried to run those back straps. I ended up grinding... two whole back straps into burger.
Yeah.
After trying like 4, 5, 6, and I ran them through a tenderizer, like run through this way, pull it out, like run it through sideways, and still to shit.
Yeah, so I don't know if that freezing has a lot.
You know how hard it is to grind back strap from a moose into burger? I'm just like, I can't believe I'm fucking doing this.
I bet.
Because I have a cooler at home, and like I'll hang stuff for a month before I start cutting it. You know, get that mold on there, and then cut that off, and. It's phenomenal. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Thinking of that, maybe I should have stuck it in the shock for maybe a while. Had it hanging. Set the shock.
It's so hard, though. Degrees. You're out there, and it's 20,
there's nothing you can do. I mean, yeah. There's nothing you can do about it.
And we had to wait three days for it to get flown out. So, it just sat at the airstrip.
Mm-hmm. But even then, it wasn't solid. So it might not be bad because it was.
I bet it's going to be fine.
Highs around
20. Anything that's on the bone.
Yeah, we kept everything on the bone.
Totally fine. Then I think you'd be all right. Yeah. Did you keep the whole spine, like that back straps hooked to the spine? So you took them off. Yeah. They might be tough.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got it down there, and we got up to it. And the cool thing was, we would walk back to the sleds, and we rode the sleds up to it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Because it was wide open, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then we took us about 4 hours to cut it up, and then Mark started shuttling loads. So me and Hunter cut it up, and Mark did 4 loads to the strip, which was 2 miles away, the airstrip, and he just threw it all in a big pallet and tarped it. And then last load, I threw the hide on the snowmobile, which was probably 125 pounds.
Those hides are heavy.
Crazy. So then, it was weird because we dumped all the meat off at the airstrip, and then we were done with it. And it was like, normally you're dealing with that meat and everything for the next couple of days.
Yeah,
like, right.
We went back to camp, and we're like, well, what do we do now?
Temp started eating
something. Yeah, so then I called that pilot, and he's like, oh, I'm doing a little maintenance on my plane. We'll give me a couple days. We're like, okay. Well, you know how pilots are up here. They're so hard to get a hold of. He wouldn't give me an answer. Like, when are you coming? Because like, we wanted to drop a bunch more gear off. We wanted to set the Arctic oven out there, mm-hmm. all our cots, so we could go back super light. So we sat in camp for 2 days, kind of just waiting for an answer, which sucked because we wanted to go like chase wolves and stuff and go check the gut pile. But like, we didn't know he could text us at any moment and be like, hey, I'm going to be there. And we had to get the camp down.
I'll be there in 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, that's what, yeah, exactly.
Pilots up here are just so weird about it. But yeah, so then finally on the second day, he's like, I'm going to be there tomorrow. And we're like, okay, do you need help? And he's like, no, I'm fine. We're like, okay. So then it was like 3-4 o'clock. And we're like, okay, we got to just pack up and get rid of this gear. So we started packing up camp. And we got all our stuff that we wanted to get rid of set aside. And I bailed it out to the airstrip and dropped it off, came back, and they packed up the rest of the stuff. So that worked out pretty good. But yeah, we sat there for 2 days, just, which was awesome, though, too, at the same point, because the night we came back.
What a relief. You're like, God, yeah. I got an awesome
I know.
Fucking animal. Like,
yeah.
Pressure relief.
You show like, him a picture. Like, I showed him the skull. You yeah. holding the skull up.
Then,
he hadn't seen a picture of the actual bull.
Because the whole timing of this, like, that was the biggest thing. Is like, me and Mark talked about it for a year, right? Well, when do we go?
What part of the month?
Like, yeah.
So do you schedule and like say when you want to do it? That's just freaking ridiculous.
Show them the picture
no,
with
the it's
bull.
All of March.
Yeah.
The whole season month. Is March.
Okay. Yeah.
So then we had to decide.
And how many people? How many other five. Hunters? There's just five.
Just
that's
five.
It
five
for
tags.
That for that farewell tag.
Mm-hmm.
You can just scroll through all these. But yeah, so then we kind of figured on going the very first of the month, and then we'd be in there for the Iditarod. And
yeah.
We're like, we've never seen that. It'd be cool to see
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But then at the same point, we wanted to be off the trail and not screwing those guys. So, like, we were kind of hoping to be done before then. And they started on the 3rd, and they'd get to us by, like, the 5th, we figured.
Yeah.
So then I was kind of worried about that. But then it worked out perfect. We killed on day 4. And that night, heading back, we got to Farewell Lake, and we saw a headlight going by. And we're like, oh, it's those guys' camp. And then we got to their camp, and then we just kept seeing the headlight go by, and we're like, no way. What ended up being the lead musher.
Dallas.
Yeah, it was Dallas. So then he was crossing the lake at like 10:45, 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we stopped, talked to those other hunters, and we BS'd with them for quite a while. And
dude, and, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Holy shit, the thing is huge.
Yeah, we should have taken measurements.
Oh my.
We had no idea.
God.
But yeah, it was
just
cool.
The sheer fucking size of the animal is like, my God.
Yeah, that's a lot of meat. But then we got back to camp that night, and then we kind of hung around, and we probably saw 3 or 4 mushers go by. It was just like... Mm-hmm. And then we had one lady stop and start yelling at us. She's like, is there mushers in there?
She saw our headlamps.
We're like, no, it's just a couple retards camping in the woods. 250 miles in on the trail.
Yeah. Well, she was looking for something. So I think she asked, is this Tin Creek? And so I'm guessing, since it was a creek with open water, I'm guessing they had been told there's open water there to water your dogs or something like that. Huh. She's like, is this Tin Creek? I'm like, I don't know. There's a creek here. We didn't say anything, but we're like, I don't know.
Were they all this light colored?
Yeah.
Lighter
all
than
of
that.
Them?
That one was dark compared.
Yeah.
Really? And this seemed to me like from pictures of,
it looks pretty
of
pale,
other
yeah.
bison, it looks so light. Not its head, but like the body of it. It looks so like
the,
blonde
even
almost.
Expediter and Anchorage had some in there, and they were way darker too.
Yeah, they
it
did look
darker. It looks so freaking light.
Yeah.
It's, dude, that's
going to make a cool rug.
Awesome. Yeah. I'd make a coat. You
the
never
drags
get,
on the
you'll never be cold
you.
When you draw your next buffalo tag.
I can't. Once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, so those mushers must have been watering their dogs or something there. Because when they were running, like they made almost hardly any sound.
Oh, it was
so you wouldn't hear them coming.
You'd hear the
dogs
headlamp. Panting.
Yeah, they never bark when they're
and
running.
The collars jingling.
Rarely.
And those sleighs
the
they're riding on, the runners are just like gliding.
Yeah.
Even on the dirt, it was basically dirt there. But we were 30, 40 yards off the trail was our tent. But if they stopped, they must have been stopping to do something before they got to us. Because then once they stopped, the dogs all lit up. They're like,
they were pissed. They're like, I want to go.
So then we'd hear them. Then we'd run out to the trail and watch them take pictures and videos.
You're saying you stand out there with your coffee on the edge of the trail in the dark?
Yeah. Basically.
It's crazy. You probably got to watch the Iditarod where like nobody else is like really ever watches it.
Yeah. And they were surprised too. They're like, they'd look at us like, what are you doing here?
These are some serious fans. Holy shit. Yeah,
we joked about that. We're like, we're out here super fans.
Yeah.
We'd have our signs and cheering them on. Go Fido.
Go Fido. Oh, man.
So then that night, a few went by in the dark, eventually went to bed at like 2:30 or something in the morning, and then the whole next day.
Holy shit, here they come.
Was a steady stream.
Oh, got the phone set up on the ground next to the trail. Dogs running by. That's cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah, so it was cool, to, even though we would have liked to be wolf hunting if we could have been, if we felt like we could have left camp. Oh, my God,
look at all these wolves. They're all tied together. Started the first one.
Yeah. But it was really cool to finally just, like, relax and enjoy camp. You know, like you guys did at Moose Camp. It's nice to just chill, enjoy camp life. That first day we had a fire for basically all day.
Yeah, we just drank coffee roasting by the fire and watched dog sledders go by.
Yep, and then same thing the next day, which we were a little more antsy the next day, just not knowing when the pilot was going to come, just waiting on him.
Yeah, I was starting to on his time.
You start thinking a little
just
bit.
Just no communication, you know. Classic air taxi stuff. But so we sat there all day wishing we could go check that carcass for wolves. But just chilled.
That's quite the relief though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were saying you guys were eating like all your meals and stuff like exploded in the action packers.
Yeah, a bunch of them exploded. So there'd be like,
what kind of shit did you bring to eat?
Oh, we went like easy on food. So classic backpacking food.
Okay, just right dehydrated. On. Just trying to like get as much as you can with less weight as possible.
Yep. Yeah, we didn't cook fancy at all, which would have been nice, of course, but. Yeah, just not totally knowing what to expect as far as conditions and stuff. We're just
challenges you're going to end up running into.
Mm-hmm. So then I think a lot of that day we spent like cleaning gear, and I remember Chris taking like every single piece of food item out and wiping it because like a few packages had exploded. So there's like
chicken and pesto
powder
everywhere.
Lasagna powder everywhere. Annihilation. But
it's amazing with 200 miles of just like bam 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 bam, just wrecks everything.
Yeah. That was crazy. I couldn't believe.
It's probably a good thing they didn't bring 6 dozen eggs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The only treat really we brought was like little smokies. We're like, nice. Good over a fire, just like roasting little smokies. And that was good. That was a good treat.
I'm waiting for this bannock shit you're
Oh man, I've been making, I've been on this like bannock kick. Holy shit.
What's that?
It's like this primitive bread.
Bread super easy to make, flour.
Oh really?
Baking soda, butter and water.
Is it like pilot bread?
I'm making like that in a cast iron.
So you're saying you
can mix almost everything and just like take it and make it. It's sweet. I'm digging it. I just started doing
it. Make it on the stove. He's like, he texted me. He's like, oh, Moose Camp, we're having fresh bread on the wood stove.
Like game changer. And I like, there's tons of different recipes, and some are like, oh, your eggs and oil and all this shit. And I like kept looking until I found like refined it to like the simplest recipe, and you can put sugar and cinnamon in it if you want to make it sweet bread or made it just straight. Salt is the other thing that goes in it. But holy shit. It's super easy to make. You don't need, all you do is just like once you got the dough, just either put the whole thing in at once or cut it into smaller pieces. And it's the kind of bread that you could like put in the breast pocket of your shirt and carry it in your shirt all day, not in a bag or anything, and pull it out anytime you want and just like take a bite of it and put it back in your pocket.
Huh.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Almost like a big fat pita bread.
Kind of, but more like biscuity. Mm. It's almost more like a biscuit.
Nice.
Weird. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yep. Something you can make on top of a propane stove, on top of a wood stove, like any heat source you could make it.
Really?
Yeah.
Even a light little pan, do you think?
Would it
have to be cast iron?
No, it doesn't have to be cast iron. Yeah, I could make it in a jet boil.
I've heard of people making it on a stick.
Yeah, exactly. Throw it right on a stick over a fire. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, that's legit. Cool. Look it up. Learn yourself how to make it. I'm fine. I'm an idiot. I should have known how to make this my entire life.
Yeah.
Bannock bread.
Yeah.
Super easy, like beer bread.
Yeah.
Beer bread. Super simple.
Beer bread's good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shockingly good.
Most things with beer in it are pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, it's wild what you crave out there, too, and bread. Definitely, it would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Salt and bread. Even though those fucking mountain houses, you're like, holy shit, look at the sodium I'm intaking. And then you're like, oh, I want is salt on everything. For me, when I'm sheep hunting, I'm like, all I want is salt on everything. And meanwhile, like, it's like, holy shit, I've just taken in enough salt for a year in 10 days.
Right. Yeah, I always want chips and stuff.
Crave
those salty snacks.
Mm-hmm.
I've been bringing the last few years sheep hunting. I've been bringing like wheat thins. Mm. I like the tomato basil wheat thins.
Yeah,
because they'll eventually get smashed up a little bit. But I'll bring a couple bags of those and Cheez-Its.
Uh huh.
Like what were the Cheez-Its I had? Like jalapeno Cheez-Its, like
buffalo
Cheez-Its.
I can't stop with those things. Now Tyler, we're sheep hunting. He's like rationing me like a couple at a time. I came back and I'm like, I got to find these things. And now I'm like, I can't stop eating them.
Yeah, like Mark brings those Cheez-Its.
Mine are the Cheez-Its grooves.
Grooves, yeah.
Oh,
like,
see.
Kind of more like a chip.
Yeah, I've had those. I couldn't get quite hooked on those.
If you like buffalo wings or something, like they got the hot and spicy Cheez-Its, they got the buffalo wings.
The hippie Freds.
They got them everywhere.
Fred Meyer. Oh, they got them everywhere now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had found them after they had when they'd been rearranging Fred Meyer, the university one, hippie Freds, I call it.
Goldstream Freds.
Goldstream Freds.
The shitty parking Freds, however you want to look at it.
But, that parking lot is, like, truly horrible.
You're never going to find gold at that gas station.
Yeah. Frank already found it. But, yeah, that one, after they had rearranged, I found like those buffalo ones and then some like salt and vinegar almonds I think I brought. Those were good. I was munching on those.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is wild the shit you crave when you can't have it.
Yeah, we're craving a Squintner burger on the way out. So yeah, did you get into the way out yet?
Do you know how many cheeseburger thoughts have turned around sheep hunters?
Oh yeah.
At like 6 miles.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That was kind of funny because when we got into Willow the night before to stay in a B&B, we could not find food. And we were there like 7:30 in the area, and there was
nothing was open or just nothing.
Almost nothing. The one place was closing up.
Yeah,
we rode by like a little deli thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up with gas station food, which was a bummer.
Right.
But then we drive in 60, 70 miles to Squintner Roadhouse, and unbelievable.
We had the best
bacon cheeseburger
ever.
It was awesome. So on the way out, we were jonesing for that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, then the way
did
out,
you get one on the way out?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the way out.
So it was fulfilled.
After we dropped that stuff off, we ended up riding back to Roan. We spent one night in Roan again, and then the next day we were figuring on staying at Squintner Roadhouse. We're like, we got to get back there.
It was such a cool place. So when the pilot came to start getting stuff, how many trips? Like, what kind of a plane did he come with?
And 182. 184?
206.
206.
206.
Yeah, so it was right. depending on where...
950 payload.
Yeah, depending on where we could get it to, he'd have a Cub or the 206. So the way it worked out, that Farewell airstrip, it's actually like an airport. They call it Farewell Airport, but it's like 3,000 or 4,000 feet long, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And there was right on. And he's like, you can do, what did he say?
Six inches.
6 inches of snow. Six and there was an inch on that.
Yeah, your skegs are bouncing off rocks going down it.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, snow wasn't an issue. And he could easily take a heavily loaded 206 out of there. So no problem at all.
Oh, that's awesome. Just to not have to worry about.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So and then we got rid of a lot of our other gear, so we came out so light.
Yeah, we're like, how much can you take?
Yeah.
Arctic oven, caught.
And we knew we had a bum sled, too, still in Roan. So we were like, we got to limp that thing out of here somehow. So, yeah, we got back to Roan, and then we kind of pieced everything together, and we made kind of everything fit in ours, and then I kind of jimmy-rigged that other sled back together, and we just put empty stuff in it. And we made it all the way to Squintna, no problem, right? No, it broke once.
Yeah.
It broke once, the bolt broke, and then I did the same thing. And then we got to Squintna, and then the next morning we were fueling up, and I was kind of checking everything, and then the tongue I noticed had a giant crack in it. And I'm like, there's no way we're making it. So I taped it, and I put a bunch of wire tie on it, and I just did everything I thought I could do. And we're like, we're just got to get out of here.
Well, but yeah.
We spent that night in Squintna again. Awesome burger. No, we had pizzas that night.
Yeah. We felt bad because
we ended up late.
It's kind of weird because you feel like even though it's their job and it's like a roadhouse.
But it's basically her house.
It's basically her house. Yeah. So you feel like you're invading, kind of.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like, whatever works for you.
Money talks and bullshit walks, boys.
whatever's easiest. And she said pizza's definitely easier. So we did pizza.
It's when you pull out a fucking chunk of bison like that. Yeah. And you're like, throw that on a fucking cutting board. And you're like, got a grinder? Yeah. Let's eat.
No, I gave her a big chunk of one of the tenderloins.
Nice. So,
yeah, she got half a tenderloin. Yep. But even before we got to Squintna, my machine started having issues.
Oh, yeah.
Where it would kind of, I was having a hard time diagnosing whether it felt like the machine was losing power or the belt was going.
Oh.
Because it would struggle on uphills and it would, like, be good. So that made me think, maybe belt. And then he'd be going for a while and it would just randomly just be losing power. And I'd look
fuel
at
pump.
Were your RPMs going up, but you would lose power still?
No, they would start to drop.
Oh.
RPMs would drop. Not a lot, but a little bit. But I'd power it off for 5 minutes, then go, and it'd be fine.
Fuel pump.
And that one time we got to the one of the big hills, and it was lacking power. I turned it off, and the whole time we'd been riding in eco mode. It's like, you don't need that much. So then for that hill, I flipped it in sport mode, and it just ripped. I'm like,
you pull those things into sport mode? Hoo-wee.
After being in eco mode, pulling 500 pounds a year. So that kept happening. Finally, we didn't know for sure. We wondered if fuel filter, for one thing, if there was any water or ice in the gas, but we had water filtered the gas and we heat treated.
Yeah, we were pretty diligent about that.
So we're like, there should not be water or ice issues in there. So then at Squintna, finally we checked oil and it was pretty low on oil. And I'd been smelling hot.
There was oil
for a while, but I don't know if it was the belt. I don't know if it was the belt. Or what, but yeah, there was oil everywhere.
So not the fuel pump. What year machine was that one?
18.
Yeah, it's the 22s that have the issues with the fuel pumps.
Well, that's what somebody else told me today that I talked to and told them what was happening, and they're like, when mine did that fuel pump.
Yeah, all them 22s, like
did
between
you figure out where
800
the oil was coming from?
Miles.
Yeah,
we did eventually.
I ended up Googling it there because we had she has Starlink out there, and I Googled it, and they said most common problem is the oil sensor. It, like, blows through the oil sensor.
Like, it pops out. Okay.
The
blows
little
out.
Plastic thing blows straight through the grommet, through the electrical. So then we kind of, like, you couldn't really tell if it was coming out of there. It was definitely covered in oil. But we're like, we just got to get out of here.
And ironically, on those four strokes, like, you can't hardly fix anything.
No.
But ironically,
yeah.
That fuel pump sensor, or that
oil sensor right there in front of your face.
Easy.
Really?
Yeah. Right on the front. Like, but we didn't have one, of course.
No. Well.
And everyone's online, like, says, oh, easiest. Yeah, we pack extras with this. It's just a common BRP problem.
5 minute fix. Mm.
So we're like, we bought 2 quarts of oil, and we're like, we'll get out of here. And yeah, he fought it the whole way back.
Just yep.
Limp mode, and not limp mode, but just losing power and
having to shut it down.
Oil.
And you just keep adding oil, yeah.
Yep.
But then we made it 3 miles from Squintna that morning. And
that's not very far.
Hunter's sled, that crack I found, that tried to fix, blew apart.
3 miles just.
So the tongue came, and it came whipping up next to him, and I got mad. And that's why I just picked up, set it on my sled, and we ratchet strapped it down.
Well, we were riding tight trail, all little moguls, and I come over a hill, and there's a sled there right beside the trail, and nobody else. Those guys are gone. I'm like, and it happened before. Like, how do you not notice that you're not pulling that thing?
And then we were sitting up there waiting
for
Mark.
Oh, we're going really smooth now.
Yeah.
We were sitting there waiting for Mark, and Hunter's behind me, and we're sitting there waiting and waiting, and finally it's like 5 minutes later, and Hunter looks down, and he goes, oh, that's probably where he is. He just had his tongue in the hand. The trailer's gone.
That's where Mark is, sitting
holy
by my trailer.
Shit. When you said tape and baling wire, I was like, I wonder how long that's going to last.
That's all we had.
Well, I know, and I carry baling wire with me everywhere, and I'm like, God, this is going to be a pinch, and it's going to be a pain in the ass when
so
I break
finally
this out.
We just got sick of it.
Suck.
We threw it on my sled on top of the totes, and we ratchet strapped it down, and we just went.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, I had two sleds out.
Mm-hmm.
It was gnarly. That trail is something else. I have a lot of respect for those people running that trail 1,000 miles.
Yeah, but epic adventure. Really, really cool. I mean, it wouldn't be, for us especially, not being super experienced with that. It felt super epic. If you did a lot, it wouldn't feel so epic. But it's interesting now, a few days removed, like, it's already like a complete blur.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That all just happened. But really cool experience.
And it was all a huge learning curve too. And
yeah.
We do
a lot of things
way different too.
Mm-hmm. If you, to do it again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But ultimately, I mean, it worked, pulled it off. And
I think we were the first people to kill out of there.
As far as we know.
'Cause we met the other guys, and then they heard of a guy in there that had the tag that was guided. We never saw them. And then as we were leaving, there was a plane flying around, and he was scouting for a group coming in. And we passed them on the way in.
Did you stop and talk with them?
They wouldn't stop. They just kept bombing.
Oh, really?
So we know there was 4 out of the 5 tag holders in there right that week.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Turks, you got to get off your machine and run waving your arms.
I mean, it's a big area. Like, it's a huge area. But at the same point, like, you got 4 hunters in there, too, chasing the same animal. It's like...
Right.
Limited trails. Yeah. You're just going to be driving.
Yeah, because you don't want to get off the trail and shoot one out in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In some burn, you can't drive through or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, we were fortunate.
Well, and that's just as an awesome bison, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shit.
That's a big bull.
Yeah, I mean, first ones we looked at, really.
Yeah, and I told myself the whole time, I'm like, I'm going to be picky, I'm going to wait, and I've never been able to do that my whole life. I'm just,
it's going to be different this time.
Shoot it!
So it was just good that the one bull was a giant. Yeah.
So then I started getting nervous those first 3 days, and I'm like, are we even going to see anything? Like, what? What are we doing? And then we saw it, and I'm like, I'm going to be picky. I'm going to be picky. And he stood up, and I'm like, I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to shoot it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
good
but
stuff.
Yeah, when they stood up, it was twice the size of any other critter out there.
Yeah, it was wild. And then he ran away, and they thought it was over.
Yep. Yeah, he comes up.
Until I start shooting. It ain't over.
He comes up yesterday. He's like,
yeah, I saw him. So
he told me, I would. You take this bison hide for $200, yeah. $200 or whatever.
Because like, yeah. I talked to Mark like before this all, and I was trying to figure out like where to bring it, all that, like get everything in my poop in a group, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, Tyler does that stuff. Would
and
you
I
do
talk
it?
Had talked to Mark before. This.
And Mark's like, no, he did Shelton's Brothers, and he will not do another bison.
Yeah.
He's like, so I called around, and I called Monarch, and they have an expediter in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, we'll do it. $500 to flush it. And I'm like,
yeah,
game,
that's really
deal
good.
Over.
So, yeah.
That's really good.
So I told Tyler yesterday at church, I was like, yeah, Mark said you'd flush it for $200. And he's like, what?
Yeah. The back skin's no big deal, but man, that head.
Oh.
Like Shelton's Brothers, I think. And I mean, like, I'm doing everything by hand, but.
Oh, it's an inch thick.
It took
there,
me.
Least.
It took me like I had like 13 hours into Shelton's Brothers. Mm-hmm. It took me two like a day and a half to get that thing like scun off the head and like prepped and fleshed to where because you got to shave like forehead yeah. that mm-hmm. whole head skin is like an inch and a half thick.
Oh,
and
I can see like, that.
You got to shave it all down to like. Where it's thin enough to where it'll take the salt good, you know?
Because yeah. we didn't care about the head because I was just making a rug. So we cut straight across the back of the horns.
Oh, yeah.
And then peeled it. But, like,
yeah.
then I had to cape the face off.
Like, yeah. It's
if
like
you were trying to make a cape out of that thing, you would have spent hours trying to get that skin off that thing.
Well, that's what I did. Yeah, I did.
It's like an inch thick around those horns.
I can tell you it's
been
true.
There,
So I was like, I'm so glad at the same point. Like, I didn't want to mount it. I just want a Euro and a big rug. So, mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine trying to cape
yeah, if
that
you add
face
the,
off.
You add the face to that cape, that adds another 50 pounds.
Oh, my word.
Well, I remember you saying that about how thick that hide was. So that's kind of what I was expecting everywhere. But then on the back.
No, the back's
it really wasn't
fine.
That thick,
the back's
except
fine.
By the butt. The
I
butt
put like
was
three
really,
holes
really
in
thick.
It. Yeah. I thought
Mark
it was super
it look
tough.
Like Swiss cheese.
So I just...
Was it still when you started peeling the hide off of it? Was there a lot of fat on it?
No,
still
fat.
No fat at all. Yeah,
no, we were
that
surprised.
Thing had no fat on it.
Well, it's
he had
freaking
been
March.
Pretty
he's been
busy.
All winter long. He's you yeah, know
that's
been
true.
Yeah. It was wild. There was no fat,
not much food.
He mm-hmm. definitely had a couple big battle wounds on the side, like you could tell
big scars. Oh, yeah. You could tell on the inside. Yeah,
pretty cool critters.
Yeah, most of their back skin, I'd say, is like as thinner than a moose.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, like moose hide's pretty uniform and like pretty
right.
thick all around, where yeah. bison, like Shelton's Brothers, like the back half, like because they brought it in two parts, the cape and then the back skin. And the back skin fleshed that in like a couple hours or less, no problem. But yeah, that cape is a those bison capes
well, the
are
hair,
no joke.
The hair on them is so long. Especially their head hair. Their
up
head
there,
hair is probably
yeah.
8-9 inches long. So that's what your knife's getting, right?
Yep.
We're fighting.
And just, yeah, like any spots you got to cut to open up that skin where it's thick, you're just sawing through cartilage, basically.
Oh, man.
It's rugged.
Yeah, I had my knife. It was pretty dull by the time we were done.
Well, that were you saying since we were talking about benchmade knives?
Yeah,
that altitude. The altitude's a good knife, but
I'll get three animals out of that thing. No
but
problem.
But you just
that
need,
buffalo,
yeah, like
woo.
They. That skin is rough. That skin.
Did you have
is
something to sharpen
edges,
it with?
Man.
With you?
No, but I took my Havilon too. So then I went through like three or four blades on my Havilon.
Right on.
Yeah. What was that? You were looking at some Frank some type.
Oh,
was
yeah.
it? Mountain Tough or Mountain Gear or something had like a new little Havilon blade
somebody
knife
made,
that looked pretty sweet.
I'll think of it. Really. Let me think about it. But it's a sweet. It'd be an awesome sheep knife, and it's like
see
a Havilon, but
it.
It's it is a Havilon blade. It's like the T60s, I think, go on there. But it's like a different. It's like a micarta handle or whatever on it, and it's like that big. And then you open it up, it's, you know.
Oh, it's foldable.
A little bit bigger. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mountain Project Skinner
yeah, Mountain
Mini
Project
Flex.
Mini Flex or something. Yeah, that's
oh,
exactly
yeah.
it. Sweet yeah, little
I have
knife.
The, I have the titanium
really
one.
Yeah.
That's a fixed blade.
Okay,
you
yeah.
pop it off.
All right.
This one looks like a fold-up one.
Because I always have to pull the blade off. throw it in my back, right? Right in my back.
Right.
That would be pretty slick.
Yeah, that fold is nice. I still am using the same, the original, whatever the original Avalon, yeah. The orange original.
They're just, for what they're good for, they're hard to beat, yeah. Man.
Yep.
Field stuff where you got to do like real fine work, or I mean, I've cut up moose with them. You just, you got to be.
Yeah, they're not great for skinning though.
I'm almost 100% with what I do, which is primarily just sheep and goats. Mm. But I'm pretty
just good skinning and not and cutting
holes in it.
100% Avalon guy, but I have the one that has. It's a folder,
it's the big
with
one.
Both blades, so it has the small blade and the bigger blade.
One. Okay, yeah.
So, which is I really like. You can put a bone saw on that big blade and have the big blades, obviously, for the bigger chunks.
I feel like you have
and
to have
the fine blade,
fixed blade.
I've started bringing because I'd bring like one of those different fixed blades. Like I got a little, custom Simbita custom one that's pretty good, and then the Benchmade Altitudes are nice little fixed blade knives. I mean, for caping a sheep, like skinning around the horns and stuff. Though there's just nothing better than those little flexible blades. Yep. You just can't beat them.
Yeah. So I carry one of those little ones.
And then for the rest of the stuff, just hacking and skinning and, yeah. Which that new little Benchmade,
it's like a
bird, like a bird knife.
You watch but out. I'm you'll like, be like, where did I lose that? Yeah. We'll be hunting. I'll be like, whip that thing
Look
out.
Look at this knife like, I just bought.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, that was quite a fleet of Benchmade knives there. Yeah. Pretty sweet.
You got a few of them.
Do you remember how many you got?
Yeah.
Oh.
I remember. Oh, man. I should. That's one of the things I need to. I got something. A guy that I know, he was waiting for something to thaw out, and he listens to Tundra Talk, and he had just been.
His haiku.
He wrote these fucking haikus, Tundra Talk haikus. He said, I was like, oh man, I'm going to read these on Tundra Talk. And he's like, don't say my name, Richard. But he wrote, he's listening to Tyler and Temple and I or something, whatever, and Connor. So he wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 haikus. Tundra Talk haikus.
I don't even remember like the criteria for what makes a haiku, but I'll.
What's 5, 7, 5? Oh. So the first one is waiting for the draw. Frank in a sundress with tits kills more sheep than you. Because he was listening to me talking about Sadie drawing me with a dress on and shit. Temple custom hats. Safe from Arctic biting winds. Beaver on your cheeks. Tyler outdoor life pretends to work really hard, flexes all free gear. That's what you're talking about. How many knives do you have? I was like, oh shit, I got one right here. I got a haiku for that. Waiting for a bear, tree sap all down the ass crack. Always check for ants. It happened to them all. Nature strikes out of the blue. I just shit my pants. Yeah, good stuff.
Oh, that's hilarious.
This is the kind of just random shit people like, once you start talking about shit your pants, you never can expect what kind of things you're going to get from people.
No, that's the truth. But that's all right. That keeps it interesting.
Oh, for sure.
I have to say, which if you got them, send them. We'll keep reading them. But there's like a shocking amount of amazing shit your pants stories for such a disgusting, like embarrassing moment. There's a lot of amazing stories.
It happens.
Yeah.
Me and Mark talk about it every once in a while.
Yeah.
You got any, it happens to you everybody. You got any good ones?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's it? Hit me with it. Hit me with a good one.
So...
Down He's south. Ready. He's
yeah, right?
I know.
You don't forget these fucking stories.
So I drive dump truck. Well, I don't anymore, but I started driving dump truck for where I work now. And
you got fired.
No, I moved up.
All right.
But yeah, I was driving dump truck and cruising down the road. And it hit me, and I was like, oh, man, whew, gotta go. Pulled off into the rest area. Pulled into the rest area, and the minute you get out, you know, you get, like, that little bit of relief standing up.
Mm-mm. Not good.
Got out and just made it three steps to the rest area, and boom.
It's like your body knows you can hold it for 2 hours, but as soon as you start moving.
Done, right? So I went in there, and I ended up cutting my underwear off, threw it in there, flushed it, went down the road about 2 miles. There's a Walmart. Went to Walmart, bought all new clothes, hopped in the bed of the dump truck. In the changed bed. In the bed of the dump truck. Kept all my day. I finished the day.
Oh,
man. It happened.
I can see you laying down there in the bed.
Oh, truck. Man. I've done that. I've been downtown before just pooping in the bed of the dump truck. What are you doing back there? I'm just checking my tarp.
Make sure there's no holes in here.
We're getting old.
Yeah, it'll only get worse.
I think how many times have I left to go pee? 3 times now?
Yeah, I got to switch back to the whiskey to start to keep from. That usually works pretty good to keep from.
I think it's about time pissing. I got to get that thing checked out.
Yeah, you can
I asked
go
Mark,
for that.
He wouldn't do it.
What'd you say you heard on the radio today?
Yeah, if you can pee. No, it's like some one of their local radio shows with a doctor. And he's like, no need to come in and check your prostate. If you can piss more than like 30 inches away from yourself, you're good.
So if you walk out there after a fresh snow and you see like a yardstick like imprint in the snow.
Well, if you walk back in and you got piss on your toes, you might need to go get your prostate checked.
That's not my problem. It's just the frequency. I guess I'm just hydrated.
All right. There you go. Look at the upside of it. You're like, oh, I'm hydrated well.
Yep. That's all right. Oh, well,
good
sounds
stuff.
Sounds like it was an awesome trip.
Epic.
Yeah. Epic trip. No doubt.
They're never quite as memorable without like a few wrenches thrown in the
works.
And
I feel like we always have the worst of the luck.
Yeah, we've had a string.
Like my goat hunt with him was a gnarly one, too. Gnarly.
Yep. Had some hiccups last fall.
Yep.
On a different goat hunt.
Blew your boat up.
Yeah.
Blew the
Did
boat up?
Did I tell
up?
You that?
No.
We popped
no,
it.
We didn't blow it up.
Oh, you popped it?
It's an inflatable, and we were just like... Finally had all the clients had left, and so we're gonna go check on my cabin quick before he had to catch a plane. We're gonna clean it up because it had been
it
long
flooded
story but
two
had,
years ago.
It had flooded so I needed some TLC and so we're quick launching the boat, but it's just an inflatable, it's one of those Solars, and I just put it on a flatbed sled trailer, and so we were going to ramp it off because there wasn't a good boat launch there, so we couldn't back it into the water. So we're just going to launch it, which I've done a bunch of times. I've wheeled it off and on that trailer.
Yeah.
You just flip down the wheels in the back by the motor.
Yeah, we've
and
always done
you it. Can wheel it off.
Because it's made to where you can wheel it around like on a gravel bar if you had to, right?
Yeah, we drag it up.
Super
and
easy.
Park it and...
Yeah, easily. Well, this time, Chris didn't lift it high enough.
Uh-oh. You just got thrown under the bus, man.
I'm just kidding. But we didn't.
We got lazy.
And we didn't lift it high enough.
Because he's got just the snowmobile, like two, they're almost like motorcycle ramps.
Yeah, they're motorcycle
for
ramps.
For each wheel.
Okay.
And then the aluminum shoots up like this still. They're pointy aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we were picking the boat up, and once the wheels went over and went down, the weight, we didn't lift
it. Pulled
it
down and the front edge.
Caught it and just.
Yeah.
Poof.
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
Done.
Get out the patch kit.
Big gash in the floor.
Were you able to patch it up eventually?
I haven't yet. It's still sitting in the shop waiting. It's.
He's looking at him. He's like, he's like, you got a couple more days here.
Yeah. He's usually, I mean, Chris is definitely my repair guy. He's a lot handier than I am and a lot more mechanical. So he does a lot of.
That's
going
to be a gnarly
me.
One, though.
But
That's
it's
on the floor.
It's doable. Though. A lot of people have done it. I mean, those guys
patched
a lot of guys
like that
just,
with a big hole in it
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Even that floor, which that floor is like, you know, it's extra. That's pretty durable stuff. They bounce those off rocks like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's ways to do it. You gotta like make a couple cuts, like angle cuts in the cut, so you can fold back edges, and because you want to get a patch on the inside mm-hmm. as well. And then fold those down, glue it all, patch on the outside. Mm. So it'll be a project, but should be able to do it right. Yeah. It's been done, so hopefully you can do it right.
Don't look at me; I'm busy making BB traps for my garage. Oh man,
yeah. But yeah,
yep. You break stuff. You break stuff if you use it.
Oh man,
for sure.
How about I got a question about you talked about getting the hide out of here. How are you dealing with all the meat?
We still have the meat at his place. Our plan was to just cut it up and process it, and then I was going to ship it home. One of my really good buddies is part of Linden Transport.
Oh, okay.
His family owns it.
Right on.
And they said they'll throw it in the bed of a truck and haul it down there.
Nice.
But just the amount of gear we wrecked, we were like, we got to spend time fixing gear.
Mm.
So we're going to bring it to Delta tomorrow and have Delta cut it up, and they'll ship it down to me.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. They'll deal with all that.
I've done that a couple times. Like, they ship my caribou down. So they just send it on Alaska cargo, right?
And then I just pick it up right on.
And Mark's going to take a bunch of it too. So,
because air cargo is a pretty like, cheap way.
Yeah.
Like
I think it's like 74 cents a pound or something.
Yeah, I use it for shipping bear hides, and it's so much cheaper than anything else.
We shipped 7 goats back from, and that's just interstate from Kodiak to Fairbanks, mm-hmm. and just fucking like serious.
Yeah,
it's definitely the way to go.
Wow.
Because normally, my goat, I just took on as carry-on. As long as you keep it under 100 pounds, like, we filled up totes, 99 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and you have 3 bags, it's like $150, right? As your check bag.
Right.
So we did that, but, like, you can't do that with a bison.
No. I got this giant skull. Yeah. Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, our goal was to just cut it up and process it, but we just didn't have the time for it, so... I'm going to bring it to Delta tomorrow and just have them deal with it.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. I might go down to
Delta and be like, look at all these fucking bison.
They're
right on the side of the road.
Unless I want to cut some out. Well, I was like, man, well, if you want to borrow a meat grinder and stuff. But
yeah, because I have all that at home. Like, I have a cooler in my shop. If you want some meat, come grab some. We got all sorts of meat.
That does sound good.
I've got so many. I'm not working tomorrow.
I got a little bit of stuff.
Let's work on some meat.
We can continue that discussion off. Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for listening to Tundra Talk. And if you enjoy the podcast, appreciate it. If you leave a good review on iTunes or whatever platform you listen on, and still have some hoodies and some hats and stuff on the website, tundratalkak.com, and tune in next time. Thanks.